Thank you. I'd like to talk to you about modular data storage Amanda, which briefly, Anvil is a toolkit for building database backends from simple composable modules. Here by backend, I mean the portion of the database system which is responsible for persistently storing data. So what was our motivation in doing this work? Well, first of all, data storage and databases drive modern applications. Virtually every system we use today, in some way, is based on has a database somewhere storing some data. And these databases actually are frequently a bottleneck for these systems. Facebook, Twitter, Google Mail, system logs, and even Firefox contains a built-in database. It turns out, though, that handheld data stores can actually outperform a more general-purpose store by a factor of 100 or more. For instance, one of the ways that you can do that is by changing the layout of stored data. There are several recent systems, including CStore, for instance, that store data as columns rather than traditional rows or apply specific compression techniques. And this gives them a lot of benefits that they can use to take advantage of specific kinds of data. But these custom storage engines, which is how they implement these sorts of things, are fairly hard to write. And I think the reason for that is that they must be consistent. They have to implement the correct transactional semantics, and that involves a lot of detailed error-prone code. They also have to be optimized for both reads and writes, and optimizing for those two tasks is actually a fairly different problem, and so it's hard to get both of them at the same time. For most applications, the investment of writing a custom data store to take advantage of the kinds of data they have would actually be prohibitively expensive. What if they just want to experiment with a new data layout or tweak some existing layout? Could we provide some mechanism for that? And so the question we ask is, can we give applications a simple and efficient modular framework that supports a wide variety of different data layouts, enabling better performance? And the answer we found is that yes, we can. So Anvil is composed of fine-grained modules called DTLs. They're composable in order to build more complex data stores from simple pieces, and they're really easy to implement. So that you can store specialized data. Now, Anvil also isolates already to dedicated writable dtables, which is one of the things that makes the other dtables particularly easy to implement, because many data storage layouts only add or change read-only dtables, which are easier to implement, like I said. This also gives us good disk access characteristics, just sort of as a side effect. This does mean we're going to need some unifying dtables in order to combine these disparate stores, the re-optimized and the write-optimized stores. The contributions of this work are the fine-grained modular dtable design, as well as several individual core dtables, like the overlay dtable, manage dtable, and exception dtable that I'll discuss later, as well as the implementation itself, showing that such a system can be fast. So what is a dtable? Fundamentally, it's a key-value store. Keys can be integers, floats, strings, or blobs, and values can be byte arrays. I would say uninterpreted, but actually there's nothing stopping a dtable from interpreting the byte array if that helps it to store it, and I'll actually show you when it does that. Iterators for dtables support in-order traversal, and most dtables are read-only, like I said. Here's a slightly simplified, but not very simplified API for what a dtable looks like. There's methods to look up, insert, and remove keys for the dtable, as well as to get an iterator. Iterators can return the current key and value that you're pointing at, as well as check to see if they're valid and move to the next item. And since most dtables are read-only, you don't even need to implement insert and remove for most of them. So I've just presented a relatively simple key store value API, but where Anvil's use of this really comes into play is that this interface is not only used by applications and front-ends, but also by other dtables when they need to talk to each other. For instance, if you have a dtable that transforms the data, it will use the dtable interface to talk to an underlying dtable, storing the actual data, and then it will transform it before passing it up. This allows you also to add indices and to build more complex functionality from simple pieces. For instance, we can see here a lookup being passed from one dtable down to two or more other dtables. For instance, you might do this if you want to overlay a smaller data store on top of a much larger, older data store in order to add more recent changes transparently. You also might want to pass an iterator request down to an underlying dtable, and then wrap the resulting iterator before passing it back up. For instance, if you want to implement a compression dtable, the wrapper iterator might perform the decompression. Here's a quick application-specific backend using a collection of dtables. I'm going to actually walk through this example, and we'll see what all the pieces do, but just to give you a little flavor of the kind of things we're actually expecting in order to happen. You connect all these details together to accomplish a specific goal. And these particular details in the box are actually all the only. This is the portion that implements your data-specific, your application-specific needs, and the others actually are just mostly glue in order to add in the writing components as well as to connect the others to the system. So our application-specific data example that I'll use throughout the talk, suppose we want to store the state of residence of customers, and these customers are identified by most of the contiguous IDs. Most of them also live in the U.S., but some of them don't, and they also move between states occasionally. Now, notice that the common case here can be stored efficiently as just an array of state IDs doing the mostly contiguous IDs. But we also don't want to penalize the uncommon case. Finally, we want transactional semantics for this data store. So these are a quick checklist of some of the items that we're going to want to take care of for our specific data storage need. And I'm going to check these off as I build the read-only component of the data store. The first dtable that I'm going to want to use to do this is an array dtable, which stores an array of fixed size values. The keys have to be contiguous integers, but as a result, locating data items will become constant time. We're just going to multiply the key by the size of each fixed item to locate the data. It can't store some kinds of data, for instance, non-contiguous keys, non-integer keys, or not the same size data, and it is also read-only. This is just a brief picture of what it looks like on disk. So now let's add this to our diagram. We can add the array table at the very bottom there. It's actually going to store most of the data. And above it, we'll layer a very simple translating dtable, the state dictionary dtable. All this does is take incoming state names, like California, and transform them into state IDs, like 31. It then does the reverse on lookups or in its iterator. This allows us to check off some of our data items. So this data set has a property that many data sets share, which is that it mostly but not entirely conforms to a particular pattern that would allow more efficient storage. The exception dtable allows us to combine a restricted dtable like the array dtable that can store the common case with an unrestricted dtable to store the exceptions. We use a sentinel value in the restricted dtable in order to indicate that we should check the unrestricted dtable for a particular key. To go along with something like an exception dtable, we might need an unrestricted dtable. We've already seen a restricted one. And a simple unrestricted dtable that comes with Mandrel is called a linear dtable. And this just stores a quick array of keys that's binary searched, followed by the contain pointers into an array of values. This is one of many ways we might implement this, but this one just was easy to implement and work for us. So we can add these pieces now. The exception dtable and linear dtable will allow us to check off the data item for people living outside the U.S. But recall that we don't want to penalize these people either. We don't want to make their lookups much slower when we try to fetch their data for whatever web application we might be building or some other application. So we might actually want to add an additional layering dtable in here, the B-tree dtable, which, like the state dictionary dtable, just helps an underlying dtable in storing the real data. And in this case, it builds a B-tree index of the keys, allowing much faster lookup than the binary search that the linear dtable would do on its own. So we can check off this other data item. Now, there's one piece left. We won't be able to write to this data store, but all of the dtables that I've highlighted so far are read-only. Well, this is great for implementing them and connecting them together, but what we want to do is to be able to actually write to this data store. So we've seen how to build this read-only data layout, and these pieces can be recombined to create other layouts like it that store different kinds of data. In the next section, I'll show you how to build a writable store from this. What we're going to do is use several specific writable dtables that are common to many layouts. You would use these in almost any annual configuration. And they actually split the write functionality and the management of that write functionality internally amongst themselves, so that you could potentially replace the policy without replacing some of the other pieces, for instance. You might ask, though, why can't we just update the array dtable? It's an array. It should be pretty easy to update, right? But actually, it's a lot harder to update transactionally. You could do it, but you'd have to do it for every single base dtable that stores a lot of data. And that would be a lot of error-prone transaction code and a lot of dtables. So our idea is to use a separate writable dtable, which can not only support writing, but be optimized for instance, by using a log. This raises several design questions, like what should the implementation of that dtable look like, and how do we build an efficient store from these write-optimized and read-only pieces. So we have a fundamental right holding table called the journal day table, which is responsible for absorbing all the writes in the system. It appends all new and updated data to a shared journal. In this case, we're appending a green data item. It also caches those data items in RAM in an ABL tree so that it can look them up more quickly, since the log is not an easy structure to look up by key. As we add more and more data items and build up the tree and append to the log, we're going to eventually want to digest this structure to produce a new real linking table, like in this case, an array linking table. And then we can cross off the data in the log and free the space in memory. The shared data structure that the journal tables use is called the system journal. And this is a library that's provided by Ember. It's a chronological order append-only data store, which supports fast, continuous writes on disks and other data storage devices like flash memory, which, although they don't share the same seeking characteristics as disks, are still better written in this nice, contiguous fashion. The data is later rewritten from the system journal elsewhere in batches from the cache. We also have to clean this data structure in order to reap the data that's no longer needed. But as an optimization, we can just delete it and restart if it becomes entirely empty, which actually happens more frequently than you might think, because entire batches of records are made obsolete all at once when we do digests. This uses a transaction system, which we describe more completely in the paper, but the two salient features of it are the client code, your application or your database content, gets to choose the start and end of each transaction. And durability is optional in each transaction, so you don't have to flush the transaction to disk immediately. But consistency is always provided, so even if you don't flush the transaction to disk, you won't end up with a half transaction. So with the journal detail, table, we can now handle writes, but we still have two separate data stores. We have one that's absorbing all the writes, and we have the other that contains a lot of real-only data. What we're going to want is one dtable that gives the best of both worlds. So the idea here is to layer multiple read-only dtables together. Here we depict older dtables lower down and the newer dtables higher up. And we have a write-only journal dtable at the very top to absorb the writes. We send lookups down the stack trying to find the most recent key that matches what we're trying to look up. We also have to merge together the iterators. Here I show the data items coming out of the dtables in the order that they were from an iterator. And we need to interleave those together in the correct order, taking care to make sure that we don't include duplicate keys, for instance, and throwing out new data items in those cases. We can also take the resulting iterator, which will do this interleaving, and pass it into a create method, a static method for a given read-only dtable type that will read the iterator and construct a new read-only instance of that dtable that contains the data from the iterator. This task is done by the overlay dtable, which I can now highlight, and check off our last item here. But it's not really the last item. We're going to actually end up needing to perform some sort of policy-based conversion of the journal tables to the read-only tables, as I mentioned. So we need some sort of policy to do that, and some component to do it. But we need to make sure we don't do it too frequently, because it decreases the performance of the overlay. We have to check more and more of the underlying tables every time. And we're also going to need, therefore, a policy for combining these things after we create them, because then we can restore the overlay performance by consolidating data. We also have to balance these goals efficiently. The managed dtable is the dtable that actually implements this policy, and it is the only dtable that needs to interface directly with the transaction library, allowing all the other dtables to ignore it. So we can add the managed dtable to our configuration, and we're almost done. But it turns out, even with that combining, we're going to build up several overlay read-only dtable subgraphs, as I depict here, by stacking them. And most of the dtable will actually be in the older ones, because they were the result of combining earlier dtables together. It would be really great if we could somehow accelerate the lookups that we're going to do to the more recent dtables that probably don't even have those. That sounds like a recipe for a blue dtable. So the blue dtable creates a blue filter for the keys in another dtable. This accelerates most non-existent key lookups to constant time. It does slow down slightly some extant key lookups, and it takes additional space in a separate file. But it's read-only, which allows us to sidestep the traditional blue filter problem of rebooting keys. It simply creates the blue filter during the create method and never touches it again. And like I said, this is particularly useful underneath the overlay dtable. So now we can add this last piece, and we have the complete configuration that I started with. This is just one of many configurations that you can build using these kinds of pieces. But this particular configuration neatly addresses exactly the data storage task we had in mind when we set out. We also include a variety of other details, and there's a list of them in the paper. I've briefly listed them here, but I won't talk about them. On to the evaluation. Our performance hypothesis here is that simple configuration changes can improve the performance for specialized workloads. To this end, we're going to tailor some detailed configurations to match specific kinds of data. We also hypothesize that performance is good for conventional workloads. To show this, we replaced SQLite's updated place backend with Anvil, allowing us to run a TPCC-like benchmark called DBT2. Finally, the overhead of digesting and combining we showed it can be reduced by background processing, since this is something we wouldn't have to do in an updated place system. So to evaluate the modularity, we load a given dtable configuration with 4 million values. A small, arbitrarily chosen percentage of them are 7 bytes, and the others are 5. And then we look up 2 million random keys. This is the configuration of dtables that we use. You see the common manage journal overlay combination, and then some sort of read-only dtable underneath. So the first test we run is to compare the results of having keys that are contiguous, which might work well for an array, with keys that are sparse, that's spaced 1,000 apart. Here we are timing the lookups for both the contiguous and sparse cases. The green is the array dtable version and with exception as well. And the blue is the linear dtable. Notice the log scale, by the way, on the right side. We can see that if you have contiguous keys, the array is going to actually be a much better choice. But if you have sparse keys, the array is a terrible choice. And so the lesson here is that Anvil's modularity allows us to choose the right configuration for this data very easily. And also notice that if you were going to pick just one, you would want to choose the B-tree dtable. So the next test that we run is to compare the effect of that B-tree dtable on top of something like a linear dtable. We also here measure the time to create the data store. We can see that the time to do the lookups is accelerated by the B-tree, but it is offset by the time to create, where we have to construct the index, adding some time. But usually this will end up being a good choice, because enough lookups will happen that you'll amortize that create cost, and then you'll be living in the long run. The last one of these reconfiguration tests that we run is to compare the linear dtable versus the array and the array plus exception configuration. We can see that in the lookup tests here, the array dtable, which by itself can't store the 7-byte values, so we have to omit them, is a lot faster than the linear dtable. But the exception dtable, when we had it, has only a small overhead, about 4%, but restores that full functionality, allowing us to store all kinds of values. So I mentioned earlier that Anvil separates reads and writes into different dtables in our configurations. We might wonder how this performs relative to an in-place, updated in-place backend. So I mentioned we replaced the SQLite backend with Anvil, allowing us to run DBT2. We run from the Columbia House for 15 minutes using a simple row store depicted on the right here. And digesting, combining, and system journal cleaning are all set to occur fairly frequently throughout this test so that it does reach a stable state where we're doing all of these things. And what we can see is that this actually works pretty well. We have a graph showing transactions per minute. We run the original backend in blue here in both a durable and non-durable configuration. But we also run the Anvil backend in green, and just for comparison, we run MySQL in orange. And the Anvil configuration actually outperforms both the original backend as well as MySQL. So the first time we saw these numbers, we thought we must have done something wrong. So we looked into it a little bit. These numbers come from IOSTAT. Disk utilization, in particular, measures the percentage of time during which there's an outstanding disk request to the disk controller. And in both the durable and non-durable configuration. And also note the log scales in the average request size and writes per second. And what we can see here is that both Anvil configurations have significantly better disk access characteristics. The disk utilization is much lower, and the average request size is quite a bit higher. We can also see that in the durable configuration, we're actually able to push through more writes per second, even though they're larger, because the data is just written better on disk. It's their larger, more contiguous writes, and they're better laid out. In the non-durable configuration, we're actually able to merge a lot of them together, vastly reducing the number of writes per second. Finally, digesting and combining are the price we have to pay for these sorts of performance benefits. They don't have property. But fortunately, these tasks can be done in the background. The read-only source data means that we can just start a background thread to read all of the data and construct a new read-only dtable by calling the create method from an overlay. This takes advantage of additional cores in Sparrow IO bandwidth, which we saw in the previous graph. To test this, we bulk-loaded the dtable with about 1 gigabyte of data. We're running a digest every few seconds, as well as combines. And we can see that in the background version, we actually, which is what we were doing in the previous slide, by the way, spent about 50 seconds to do this bulk loading, whereas it's 82 seconds with that. And so although there is a fairly high overhead involved in doing these digests and combines, we can safely do those in the background without and substantially improving performance. So there's a fair amount of related work here. Some aspects of Anvil, for instance, resemble big tables, SS tables. For instance, the write-optimized logs, as well as read-optimized data. Bigtable also includes, though, a higher-level distribution system, which is complementary to the things we're trying to accomplish with Anvil. You might build a single-node version of an SS table using something like Anvil, for instance. Also, CStore, that I mentioned earlier, investigated some data-specific optimizations and finer control of data layout. It didn't focus as much on modularity, allowing applications to choose what they wanted to do, but it did provide several built-in things that we found inspirational. Finally, there's some abstraction providing libraries, like the Stasis Transaction Framework and the BerkeleyDB Persistent Data Structure Library, which operate at a lower level than Anvil, providing lower-level persistent data structures, allowing applications to deal directly with things like linked lists and trees. So in conclusion, Anvil provides a new way to build modular storage systems, allowing the desired functionality to be composed from fine-grained dtable modules. Simple configuration changes allow storing data in many different useful ways, and it's easy to write new dtables for novel storage strategies because the interface is relatively simple and they're read-only. It does still lack some features. We mentioned in the paper, for instance, aborting transactions in full concurrency, but we also sketch our plans for implementing these, so we think that they're reasonably compatible with other read-only. And finally, the performance overhead is small compared to the potential benefits of applications. For instance, our current site is faster than SQLite's B-tree-based backend in our TPCC benchmark. So thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Hello. Hi. Rich Malan from Stanford University. So I'm slightly I'm actually very unsatisfied with your comparison to PDB. I don't know why you didn't do an evaluation comparison against them, because from what I can tell, you are very, very similar. PDB also lets you take a very modular approach to how you use a library. You use just a log. They have a rec node, which is now lets you array. They have hash tables. You can even write your own logical log entries if you want. You can use whatever you want. You can have non-verbal transactions. It's extremely configurable. And I'm wondering why there was no evaluation comparison against them, or a feature comparison against them.
That's actually a really good question that I don't have a particularly good answer for you.
I was wondering if there was a question in that.
I guess I just have to say that basically I didn't find it quite as easy to sort of construct these read-only data stores. One of the big problems with something like Berkeley Database, at least in our opinion, is that in order to create these sort of customizable data stores, you need to do all this transaction code, which can be very tedious and time-consuming.
It's a board commit. It's just begin transaction, do whatever you want with data structure. It takes care of the bookkeeping.
I'm not as familiar with exactly how to implement that within BerkeleyDB, but I have implemented several transaction systems, and I haven't found it to be easy in any of them. But I mean, maybe they've got something really cool.
Let's take
the
rest of
those. Yeah,
take
our one.
Thank you, Bradley.
Is your question that you from my last year?
We do actually have some benchmarks showing the overlay iterator's performance in the table, in the paper, yes.
So can you summarize
these? Basically, the main overhead...
The order that things are being modified. for example.
What's that then?
How dependent is the iterated performance based on, you know, the updates that actually occur? Like, if I'm a devil's advocate, in the example you gave, I produce updates and cause very bad iteration performance?
I don't think so. What do you mean by cause bad iteration performance?
Well, you want to be able to iterate in order if you're putting
You mean like potential? You mean to force the ABL tree to somehow be constructed poorly?
Well, let's say I'm not sure exactly how you implement an iterator when you have data spread all over the place.
I guess I'm really not quite sure what you mean though.
So anyway, you have measurements in the paper that are indicative of iterators.
I'm also having trouble hearing it.
I'm just saying, you have measurements in the paper I should look at.
Yes, there is a measurement which basically investigates the performance, in particular the overlay iterator, because it actually ends up doing a lot of key comparisons, which we find are somewhat expensive. And what we do there is we basically take an iterator to an overlay loop table with some dtables underneath, and iterate it back and forth and back and forth a lot, and then compare that to just the iterator or the underlying dtable directly, where we don't have to do all the key comparisons. The overhead of that was less than 10%, and it was mostly CPU overhead to handle virtual function calls.
Last two questions.
I was just curious if you could elaborate a bit more on, I was really interested in the mechanisms for creating custom dtables for particular applications. I was wondering about the mechanism for creating dtables in particular, how it is that you've made it so that the creator of a new type of dtable doesn't have to think about how to satisfy transactional or, for instance, ACID semantics.
So the way that works is that most new dtables are read-only. So you implement a create method, and you're passed an iterator at some point, and you don't have to worry about constructing your dtable in a transactional way, because you're writing new data that isn't yet referenced, very much like shadow paging. Once you've completed writing it, there's actually a small hook that the managed dtable takes care of for you with the transaction system to make sure that everything that you've written is safely on disk before it swaps it in atomically and makes it live from whatever the source was.
So that explains for read-only dtables, but I was particularly curious about what you have to make it easier to get transactional semantics right for read-write dtables.
We envision that most people wouldn't be writing a natively read-write dtable. You would write a read-only dtable, and then you would use our writable dtables and the unifying dtables, like the array and managed dtable, in order to add the write functionality to your read-only dtable. But you could implement your own read-write dtable, but would sort of be missing a point, I think.
Last question. Hi, I'm in Seattle, Wisconsin. So I really like this work. I have questions related to like repair utilities. So all the management systems at the end will have repair utilities. All systems have FSTK database actually like repair utilities. But these developers can write these utilities because the on disk metadata are pretty much like static. They know where they are, so they could write kind of consistency checking because they don't know what they look like. Not like an anvil where it's more like dynamic. So I would like to hear your thoughts on how should the developers write recovery tools for systems like anvil.
So the transaction system built into anvil includes a recovery mechanism that recovers the state of its of journal dtables and the system journal automatically. You don't need to write that portion. And most of the other things that you're supposed to write again are read-only. So those, you know, they either were created completely or they aren't yet referenced, so you don't need to recover them. So I think the answer is pretty similar to the last question, unless I missed the point.
Thank you.